So actually the title of the whole retreat together is really working with the past to empower the present. And so I want to a little bit address the issue of actually how we empower the present and what that means to empower us in the present. And I think first I just want to a little bit summarize one or two points, especially the way the Dharma works in this. We have already seen and witnessed how much we are influenced by what has happened to us, whether it's generations before or whether it's in our life or whether it's in our environment, how we are so influenced and changed by conditions, and conditions get inside and shape us. As we said before, the image of the olive tree, we are shaped by everything that's happened to us from the first cell of egg. We have been shaped. And we don't know exactly this process. It's happening in a way automatically. And we feel it very strongly if we feel guilt or fear or anxieties, and as I said before, the scars. And we do inner work, and we wish to purify the influences and the traces, the tracks, the sankharas. And often they don't disappear so easily because they're quite deeply ingrained, or they're engraved quite strongly in the shape of our consciousness. So we might find ourselves after sometimes years of practice, and we think we should be already Buddha, of course. And then our partner says something to us and boom, we explode with anger, and we think, well, Buddha doesn't do that. So obviously it hasn't worked, all the Dharma. And we get down on ourselves because we think, you know, all these retreats I've been sitting, all this hard work I've been doing on the meditation cushion, and I'm kind of still schlepping along. And it needs a slightly more wise view to see that of course there is change, and of course there is freedom, and of course we are deeply conditioned as well, and some things do not leave us so easily, and they are ingrained. You have to keep working and growing and changing, and it isn't an immediate process, as Renata said at the beginning. It does take time, it takes dedication, it takes being persistent on the path. But of course after a while you realize that this is the best thing I can possibly do. It just becomes clear that the path is not just hard work. The path is a path that has so much meaning that anyway we're on it. And so there's enormous help in this from the Dharma. The Dharma is a huge resource. And I just wanted to raise one or two Dharma wisdom here to help us. One is, as I said before, that it helps us that we recognize the sense of being as under the conditioning. Just the sense of being as we sit, as we walk, as we connect with the world. This is not really conditioning. This is a place of our being. And so I called it the white page. Every time we do this, there's something in us that gets a little bit softer and less conditioned, less automatic. We are opening our consciousness, expanding our consciousness, becoming more aware. And then when something comes up, we're with that. And that is the material that arises by itself. And this sense of being with presence, and then being with mindful awareness of content when it arises, when it's calling for our attention. And this easy exchange between one and the other. Now there is just walking, and now there is a difficult thought. And now there is a pain that is painful to me. But it's just a painful experience, and now there's walking again. This sense of moving easily between content and ground is one of the kind of gifts of mindfulness, and it makes us in a way more able to hold our life, more responsible, more this is what is really happening to me. And this sense of owning our own experience, responsible for our experience, and not, it's not the world doing it, it's not there, it's not them, it's here. That's a very important movement. Mind your mind, as the slogan goes. It's your mind, it's all there. And as we practice mindfulness, we learn this. And as we do this, we become empowered by itself. And there's a lovely story of a woman that dreamt that she was being chased by a demon in the dream. And she ran and she ran and she ran, and the demon was behind her, chasing her, chasing, chasing, big demon. And she ran and ran and ran through fields and houses and then past forests and so on. Eventually she came to a cliff, a wall, a rock, and she couldn't run anymore. So she turned round to the demon and said, "What are you going to do to me?" And the demon, big teeth, looked down on her and said, "I don't know. It's your dream, isn't it?" So we begin to own they're ours. The demons, but if they're ours, then we can deal with them. They're not out there. We can't deal with them. They're ours. We can deal with them. And one of the most beautiful things in the Dharma is that when we watch the difficult things, we don't actually need to fight them. We do not actually need to battle the difficult things, the difficult experiences, the painful experiences, because they go by themselves. The problem is we don't usually notice that they go by themselves. But if we pay attention, and this is another gift of mindfulness, if we really pay attention, we see that everything has a beginning and a middle and an end. And if we truly see the ending of something, in that moment it has less power over us. So actually it's not a demon chasing us, it's a demon that sort of appears and disappears. And if we notice that he's gone now, then he's gone. He's not there. And so we do need to see that things go by themselves, and it's a habit energy that we give to things that allows them to keep coming back again and again and again. So we may have a thought, for example, guilt, and we discussed this quite a bit together. It feels very solid. It feels like it's a message that's there with me for my life. Every morning I get up with it, and in the evening I go to bed with it. But it's not like that. If we look carefully, guilt or any other will be a habit of the mind that is, in a certain moment, it is there, it arises and it goes. And the next minute there will be something else. And if we don't give it this status, the status of a special problem I have, give it solidity, give it shape, give it control on us, but see it, it is a thought. It has a beginning, it has a middle, and it has an end. It may come again, but every time we see that it comes and goes by itself, we are less feeding the tendency for it to keep coming back, because we see it's gone. The bell is there instead, a bird is flying by instead, a word is being said instead. At the moment, no guilt. It's just gone. And we have to see that again and again, that, and we begin to be free then of the habit. Emotions can be very strong, they can feel very powerful, but they have a beginning and a middle and an end. And that's it. They may come again, but each time they are just a phenomena that arises and passes away. I'll quote Krishnamurti on emotion. He says, every thought and feeling must flower for them to live and die. The flowering of everything in you, the ambition, the greed, the hate, the joy, the passion, and in the flowering there is their death and freedom. It's only in freedom that everything can flourish, not in suppression or in control. To allow envy, there's an example of a difficult emotion here, he's using envy. To allow envy to flower is not easy. We condemn it, we hold on to it, but we never give it freedom. It's only in freedom that the fact of envy reveals its colour, its shape, its depth, its peculiarities. If it's suppressed, it will not reveal itself fully and freely. When it has shown itself completely, there is an ending of it. And then maybe another fact will be revealed, emptiness or loneliness or fear. And as each one is allowed to flower in freedom completely, there is no longer the censor, but only seeing. Freedom can only be in completion, not in repetition or suppression or being obedient to a pattern of thought. There is completion only in the flowering and the dying away. So let it arise, complete itself, and go. And another aspect of the Dharma, which is part of this, it goes together, is there isn't any sense of blame or sin or guilt. The Dharma itself doesn't encourage this. It's really amazing. It's a teaching thousands of years and it doesn't have this concept sin. The concept of sin, of evil, is just not there. It's an amazing relief to realize that there's not a sense of evil, and certainly not a sense that we are evil, which has come through in the Western world. Instead, there is something which is, I think, much wiser and more respectful of the human being, which is the concept of nutrition, of feeding, and the sense that it's not that there is bad, but that what we need to do is feed what is wholesome, what is healthy, what is helpful to us, and not feed what is painful. Just don't give it food. And when you don't give it food, the fire dies down. and you feed what is wholesome. And what is wholesome? Being steady in the middle of difficulty, being kind and compassionate, being awake, being aware. Anything that gives us freedom, anything that reduces the suffering of ourselves and others, all of this is wholesome, and we feed that. So it's a different attitude. The human being isn't something wrong with a human being. It's just that we feed what is wholesome. And when the wisdom of the Four Noble Truths is a kind of fundamental teaching, and it's a teaching that we really do need. It changes the way we look at difficulty. In other words, we don't feel difficulty, we have to blame ourselves, but we do know the difficulty exists, and we don't try and push it away or pretend that life is has to be different. We turn towards difficulty because it's there. We don't make a big deal out of it, we don't build it, but we know that there is difficulty. So in the practice, in the Satipatthana Sutta, which is a kind of fundamental Buddhist text that guides the practice that we're doing, and that is one of 10,000 texts. So one of them, the Satipatthana Sutta, it's a kind of ground of the Vipassana movement and Vipassana practice. But it says that the Four Noble Truths are to be practiced in the moment. They're not philosophical truths. They are to be practiced in each moment, as well as practiced in a whole lifetime. And they would invite you to say, okay, what is there in this moment that might be a source of pain? What is it that I'm attached to that could give this painful experience? What is the freedom in this moment? And what do I need to do for helping this freedom to flourish? So it's a slightly different view. We don't blame ourselves for a difficult experience, but we do need to look directly at the difficult experience. And if we experience in our life, or as we sit, a restlessness or tiredness, or we experience neediness, or we experience emotion, difficult emotion of I'm lacking something, I have a need, I don't like this, I want this to be different, I want life to be different, this is not right, this is not good, we feel these things arising in us, the First Noble Truth invites us, or the Four Noble Truths invites us to turn towards this experience as our teacher. One Dharma teacher I have said it very beautifully. He said, if you experience one of this kind of difficulty or neediness or discomfort, it's like on the map of Treasure Island, you know, the book Treasure Island. On the map there is an X and it says, dig here. The treasure is under here. So it's like the map of the island of where the treasure is buried. Do you understand me, the English? The treasure is buried underneath this cross, so dig here, you'll find the treasure. We find the treasure. It might be subtle, we might not notice it. But, I don't know what... The tea, we ran out of tea, there's noise in the, too much noise in the building, or I didn't sleep at night, or I don't like what's going on, I don't like these teachers, I don't like this retreat, there's something wrong here, or I don't know, whatever. It's irritations which we think, well, they're fact. This is fact. Wait a minute. It's a teacher. We turn towards it and we dig there. What is it that I'm trying to fix or control that's making me feel something is wrong? Because at that place, if we dig there, we find the treasure. Because of the First Noble Truth. We dig, we discover our neediness, our survival, our suffering, pain, and we find out, ah, it's my attachment, it's my holding on to something, ah, I can let go, it's just an experience, it's not truth, it's not the world, it's just what's happening, ah, it's gone, and I'm free. We want to transform, we want change, but sometimes we forget that change happens often through meeting difficulty. It's not all a comfortable ride, but we can't avoid that. There is the a text called The Snake Skin, the skin of the snake. The transformation, when the snake needs to develop a new skin, it's not so easy to get the old, get out of the old skin. Needs quite a lot of work, and it may be a bit painful. It has to kind of strip off the old skin and then come out with a new skin. I remember one time I was in India, and I kind of forgot this. And I was having a really hard time. Well, I love India, and I've been there more than 2 years. I've been living in India. And but this particular time, I was having a really hard time. Everything was difficult, and everything was problematic, and everything was on my head, and I felt so low and miserable. I was struggling. And I was sitting in the cave of one of the great teachers, and I just went up every morning. Oh, couldn't take it. I was climbing up, sit in the cave all day, 8 hours sitting, come down, sleep the night, go up the next morning. Oh, there's no point in this. This is all useless. I'm all useless. It's not happening. And again, the next day, up, go into the cave, sit there 8 hours, come back down. Oh, it's just, and everyone around, you know, looking so happy and joyful. And all these Israelis, by the way, there, oh, with their nice Indian clothes, you know. And after the 5 days in the cave, I suddenly said, enough. I don't know why this is. I give up. I don't care anymore. Whatever's going to happen, happen. I surrender. Nothing to do. I just surrender. Take me. And of course, at that moment, everything radically changed. And I sat in the cave 3 weeks after that, and it was an utterly amazing. And only then I realized that what I was experiencing before then as a lot of misery was part of the process that I hadn't noticed. It was part of the process. I thought it was me and I was having a hard time. But the thing had already been working and giving me a hard time. The practice was already doing it. But I was just blocked and I couldn't see. I just thought, it's all, nothing's happening, but it was happening. But I needed to get out of the snake skin, which wasn't easy, and I hadn't noticed. that that was what was happening. It's just a small personal story. But so we dig where we dig where it's difficult, and that's the place actually of transformation very often. And it's all in small moments. So about empowerment. Something basic to all of this, which is in many ways, firstly, that we live in these small moments and we forget that. We tend to look at ourselves as a person and we want to be different and we want to be better. We kind of forget that we can only live in small moments. That's where the life happens. So we tend to, we act spontaneously in the now, whether we like it or we don't. And we have a narrative running at the same time at the level of me saying, I want to be like this, I want to be like that. But actually, we can't be anything else other than what we are right now. Who we are is how we are. And how we are is who we are. We can't be other than who we are at this minute. Even if we have the narrative running, I want to be better, I want to be somebody else. So this brings it really down to reality. We are as we are, and there isn't any way that we can be somebody else. And therefore, in a way, we just have to live our truth in every moment. And there is the empowerment. Rather than kind of believing in the Messiah coming, or believing in a better world, or believing it will all be better then, or I will be better then, and meanwhile I'm like this, we just know that now is the time, and now is the place where I am as I am, and all the practice I've done in my life, and all the goodness in my heart is manifesting right now. There is a famous quote from Gandhi, who said, be the change that you want to see. In other words, you don't just look for or want to have change, be the change that you want in the world. You are it right now, be as you are now. And therefore, it's back to us again, the journey of changing our nature, our inner world. The journey of transformation is the only journey. And then we act from where we are all the time, spontaneously. Mm-hmm. Happens by itself. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. That's the slogan we use in our peace walks. But it's from a wonderful man called A.J. Must, who wrote a book at the time of the Vietnam War. And I must tell you a small story from this book. It's really beautiful. He was sitting outside the Pentagon on a vigil by himself, night and day, in the rain and in the sun, in the night with a candle, as a personal vigil against the war. And someone came to him and said, look, you're an idiot. You don't understand. You're not going to stop the war. You're not going to change anything. You're not going to change them by sitting out here with a candle, just you. He said, no, you don't understand. I'm not trying to change them. I'm making sure they don't change me. So the meditation practice and our whole practice is going to the source of who we are as we sit here, and from there change happens. We go to the source, we go inside ourselves, and we see who we are, we meet who we are, bit by bit, we let the stuff go, we feed the wholesome, we let go the parts that, or we don't need to do anything about them, they come and they go, we let them go, the parts that give us, that hold us back, that give us difficulty. And then we find ourselves with the new path, with meaning in our life. We find it happens by itself. If we take responsibility for our mind and our heart, then things, what we need to do in life, begins to happen by itself. There is a wonderful book in the Bible called the Book of Jonah, that you, maybe many of you know about it. Jonah is a prophet, he had a sense of mission, but in some way or other he wasn't ready, and he was told by God, shall we say, by the inner voice, to bring teachings or to bring a moral sense to a certain huge city at the time, and he was afraid and he couldn't do it and he didn't want to do it, and he felt inadequate. In other words, he had stuff going on, and he went on a boat to the wrong place. He ran away, basically. He ran away. He escaped from his mission, and the result of that was that he got thrown into the water. There was a storm. He got thrown into the water and he got swallowed by the whale. And in the story itself, this sense of being swallowed by the whale is a beautiful, beautiful description of reaching our source, reaching the bottom, the being swallowed by the whale in the dark. It's our meditation practice. It's being swallowed by the whale, going down into the dark and meeting the, if you like, our death and our root and our basis of our mind and the elements that make us up, the very going right down into the source. And when he was in the source, he went through this kind of dark place. He got, the whale threw him out onto the place where he, and he was ready for his mission in life. He was empowered. He received power from reaching, from touching his source. And then he was ready. Something in him was ready. He reached a place of zero, and then he could be a hero. There was this funny comment from Osho, who said, "Why be a hero when you can be a zero?" I would really kind of shift that and say, well, you know, you can only be a hero if you can be a zero. First you have to be the zero, then you can be the hero. And the Book of Jonah actually does tell us that. Empowerment is not about control. We have to be careful not to be in the control business. It's not trying to control life. It's not trying to be in control, trying to control ourselves and other people. It's, as the Indian story goes, it's not trying to cover the earth with leather. It's making shoes with leather for ourselves. And it's an old Indian story about that. But it's our taking responsibility, seeing ourselves as we really are, taking responsibility for what there is in us, who we are, and then the empowerment, the action happens by itself. So here, in a very small way, we take responsibility for example, the guilt that has been expressed here, the sense of pain that's been expressed, the sense of victim that's been expressed. whatever in this forum here, in this group here, we've expressed many difficult emotions, the sense of pain and suffering that kind of arrived on our shoulders, and all these emotions that we found difficult. And I'm not talking now about all the emotions that we find easy and helpful, but only those, taking responsibility for them, seeing that they're there, seeing that they arise and pass away, gives us that sense of we are standing in the middle of our life. I am with everything. It's like I am in the eye of the storm. I am with all the elements of my life. I'm with the source of them. I'm with the expression of them. And just like Etty Hillerson said, this is the source of the beauty and the bigness of my life. And if we don't need to control things, then we just find that we become freer, and then we can express it. And as we do that, and if we can see ourselves like that more clearly, we can also see the other more clearly. If we are more clear about our own inner life, we are more clear about someone else's inner life, and we can see the other. And part of healing ourselves is our ability to see the other. At some point in the story, Etty was being shouted at by a Gestapo officer who was screaming at her. And she said, I saw this man so nervous, so lost. He looked like an unhappy boy. He must have had a really unhappy childhood. He looked like a lost boy that was just screaming at people because he didn't know anything else. There was so much compassion in Etty towards this Gestapo officer screaming at her, but the compassion was based on her inner power to see her own life, and therefore to see someone else's life. And therefore she could see this person. He wasn't just a Gestapo officer in a uniform. He was a living human being, part of the tragedy, expressing the difficulty in his life. Even though it was violent. But she saw him. So part of our meeting of our own life is that we meet others' life. And one of the most special things, practices that we can do, and we do, we did it here, is putting ourselves in the shoes of the other. And it's a fundamental practice in the Dhammapada, in Shantideva, the path of the Bodhisattva. It says that putting yourself in the shoes of the other is a sacred act. It's very beautifully expressed. It's a sacred act. It's holy, because it heals the world. And we can only do it if we are, in a way, less blind to ourselves. I'll leave it. There is a very nice concept that actually comes from the Tibetan tradition called the Shambhala warrior. Warrior is the fighter, but it's the Shambhala is heaven. It's like Garden of Eden, Tibetan style. And it's very interesting how the talking about empowerment and action in life, the Shambhala warrior is first of all an ordinary person, as I say, not a hero but a zero, who is in life and acts with wisdom And the wisdom, therefore, is the wisdom of not being full of self, and being able to see others, being able to see what's needed, having the wisdom of inner freedom. And the Shambhala warrior is quite invisible. He's not someone that makes a big noise. We often wouldn't see the Shambhala warrior. He's invisible. He makes, or she, will make change around them, and nobody kind of notices that they've been changed. It happens that things are changed because of the presence of this person, and nobody maybe knows that it's this person that did it. I think to some extent many, many mothers in this world are Shambhala warriors who are making change in their children, in the world, and nobody notices because they're just, everyone says, well, a mother's just a mother growing up children. But it's not just that, it's huge. And fathers. The Shambhala warrior is humble. The Shambhala warrior solves problems with mindfulness. Really, everything that we come up with in life, we may come up with huge conflicts and decisions to be made and choices that are very difficult, whether to confront something or give in. If we talked about it, should we confront something that's harmful or give in to it and not face it? We talked about it in our group last night. But that kind of decision, which is very difficult, in theoretical terms, it's very difficult when we try and think about it. But if we are mindful, we will know what to do. Because the mindfulness is a tool of seeing. And the seeing is beyond whether we need to take a risk or not take a risk. Because we live in this moment fully. Mindfulness brings us into the moment. And if we live in the moment fully, then that is the solution to the problem. Being fully in the moment. Just like Etty said yesterday, I quoted it, it's the day. If I really feel there's only this day, then it doesn't matter. I will know what to do. I will know what to do. I can take a risk, because I don't know about tomorrow. But today I know what's right. And this minute I know what's right because of our mindful awareness. This is the right thing to do right now. And let tomorrow take care of itself. I will take care of today. And this kind of attitude of close connection to the moment is where many, many problems, difficulties are solved, which we don't know because we think about them from standing back. You know, we think abstractly about them, but in the mindful awareness we will know what to do. So so I'll finish with one or two sentences that about liberation and freedom. Suzuki said, there isn't such a thing as a liberated person. There's only a liberated action. And it really brings us back to the now, where is the only place that we can really live, and the only place where we can act. And the now is where we are. And all the practice we do in our life is only leading to this now, right now, and the next now. And our journey is to be more and more and more free and light and wise and less automatic in our life. and more fully aware and awake in the moment, and actions then will look after themselves. We will find ourselves empowered, not because we say, I need to be empowered, I want to be less helpless, I want to be less frozen, I want to be less imprisoned feeling. We are in the moment, light and free, and actions will take care of themselves. We will be fine. They will take care of themselves. There's a quote from Chesterton who said, why do angels fly? It's because they take themselves so lightly. So we can be angels if we take ourselves more lightly, more freely. Come down off the roles, the needs, the sense of being heavy, being a person, and just living the moments as much awake as we can. Thank you. So we'll take a couple of minutes just quietly.